I'll bet against a better team at home. I don't care who died.
Free massages.
Oh, this is
Say at least one more time. You can't say stuff like this on podcast, all right?
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, January 11th, 2010. I'm your host, Adam Barron, and joining me today, two football writers ready to go. We got some news and ready to laugh at themselves for some of the predictions they made before the season. We got Kyle Maestri.
It's been a while. It's been a while, guys.
And Bobby Colovi.
You'll hear plenty of me this year. I have a much easier schedule.
Yeah, we all have a little bit more of a convenient podcasting schedule at this point, but I want to get this one done this afternoon. So let's start off with some news that started came out today about some Gators going to the NFL. Marquise Pouncey and Carlos Dunlap. None of us are surprised by Dunlap. I don't think any of us are really too surprised by Marquise Pouncey. The news is that Mike Pouncey is staying. So what do we think of that?
It doesn't really surprise me. Marquise is projected to be the top center, if not the second center. Putting him in probably second or third round. Usually the centers don't go in the first round, so he can't do much better than second or third, even if he was a return for you. Mike seems to be more in a group of guards instead of being, one or two, where he could go probably as high as the third round, but then he could drop if he was the last one taken out of that group of guards as the fifth round. So probably a good move coming back. Next year he should be the best guard coming out.
Mm.
Yeah, I can't say I'm surprised by any of that news. It's kind of how we expected it to work, so nothing really surprising there.
And Dunlap, first-rounder, pretty much guaranteed. I heard somewhere, I forgot where it was the other day, somebody said Dunlap, might not be a first-rounder. I think that's ridiculous. He's so athletic. He's so talented. He's got so many tools, and NFL guys, they just love that.
Yeah, they love that. I mean, if they were, I would say he hasn't been as productive as, he hasn't been as productive as Mario Williams in college, but it's a very similar situation where they're going to watch film of him, and you're going to see him and you'll be like, man, this kid's a freak.
Yeah.
And then a few plays later, you're going to be like, well, why is he being dominated by this joke of a tackle? And it's because it seems to me as though with his size and his skill, he should be dominating every play, but he probably takes a couple plays off a game. But it won't matter. They'll see him. I mean, Mario Williams went first overall.
Yeah.
They're not going to care. I mean, they're going to care a little bit that he takes a couple plays off, but it's something that they think they'll be able to break that habit. He'll go in the first round, probably. I'd say top 15. There's a lot of good defensive ends.
Yeah.
And, I mean, before the incident, I'd say he was guaranteed, a top 10 pick. But I think he drops a little bit. I think people are a little bit worried. They shouldn't be. I think Dunlap is a good character guy despite that one arrest. But I think he drops a little bit, especially since how close all the defensive ends were at the top. I think they'd rather go with someone who hasn't had any priors.
Mm. All right. Well, then that's pretty much the only news. Obviously, some recruiting stuff to possibly fill the hole left by Carlos Dunlap.
I mean, you can kind of bet that they knew Dunlap was gone when they went to Ronald Powell and say, "Hey,
absolutely,
we need you. We have Duke Clemens and Willie Green right now as our starting defensive ends. We need you." And he jumped. I meant behind Tridow. Especially since they like running three defensive ends. And Pete Carroll left USC, and he's between UF and USC. He's got one coach who will be back.
One coach, yeah.
Who's not actually here and will be back. And one coach who's bolting and isn't coming back. And there's likely, I'd say, probably USC's going to get in a little bit of trouble soon.
Yeah, so probably not a good situation to get into. UF also got the nation's top defensive tackle.
Sheriff Floyd.
New sheriff in town.
That's right. Who's on the recruiting?
Yeah.
I am.
Sorry. I'm usually pretty good about it. But just because he's the best defensive tackle doesn't mean much. I mean, Omar Hunter was towards the top. And in 2006, they brought in the top two defensive tackles. If any of you remember, John Brown and Torrey Davis, neither of who are here anymore. Just because you're the top defensive tackle, I have my theory. I won't
he's
get
a Bobby
into it
special
too much.
Too.
Yeah, he's
good.
A Bobby special. He's a
Bobby
he's,
special.
He's a big fatty. He's going to have to get in shape. I like
not
smaller
not because Bobby's
guys.
Fat, yeah. But I don't know. Have you given this theory?
On the podcast. My theory is that you can always – someone who's 300 pounds in high school gets to go up against guys, offensive linemen who – I mean – you occasionally get the big offensive lineman who's around 300 pounds, but that's rare. You're never going to find him usually. He usually gets to go up against 220, 240-pound offensive lineman.
Yeah.
He's got a 50 to 80-pound weight difference. Manhandles them.
Yeah.
Not much work. Just gets to throw him around any way he pleases, and he looks great. Then you've got a defensive tackle who's 260 works hard every single play, makes sure, you know, he's got to. Yeah. He's only got a little bit of a weight difference. And you get to college, the guy who's been worked hard knows how to work in the trenches, knows how to use his hands well, and you can easily put on 30, 40 pounds on this kid. A kid who's 320, 330 is going to be big fatty, never has worked, probably is not very fast, and you've got to now get him into shape, teach him how to use his hands. He's too much of a project for me. I'd rather go for the little bit smaller guy who's probably not he's not being recruited as highly, and it's going to be an easier get to bring into your class, and he's going to be better sooner and faster.
I just love your insistence on calling them fatties.
Well, they are fatties.
Bobby's theory is almost always right.
Yeah.
The only reason I would maybe this case is a little bit different is if they switch to the 3-4.
Yeah.
They kind of just need someone to be fat in the middle. And yeah. if he can just be fat in the middle, then he'll serve his purpose.
There are occasional exceptions to this rule, but for the most part, I'll guarantee you most of the defensive tackles in the first round or so this year, if you go back and look at them, not highly recruited guys. They're very low on the board. I mean, B.J. Raji was the first last year, I believe, and I think he was like a 2-star, 3-star type Jeez. Guy. And he was small.
That's quite a job
I think
description.
He was a defensive end.
Ah.
I love those. Defensive ends who turn into defensive tackles in college.
That is quite a job description, though. Just be fat. Just get in the middle and be fat.
I mean, beat Terrence Cody.
Yeah.
He's the ultimate 3-4 defensive tackle.
I want to talk about that 3-4 thing, because I guess we haven't talked about Edwards being brought on as the defensive coordinator on the podcast.
So. Yeah.
So much has happened. I don't know what we're
talking
about.
I saw him be hired, and he was a linebackers coach.
Yeah.
And the only opening on defense right now is cornerbacks.
Yeah.
And why bring him in? You just hired a linebackers coach. And then he had the title inside linebacker, which pretty much says, I mean, if you're in a 4-3, he's get a coach one guy. Yeah. Like,
it's going to be him and John Boston.
Yeah.
Come on, John. It's like that scene in The Waterboy with the kicker and the special teams coach who just run laps together.
Don't think he came up
no,
with
it. No, I mentioned that
he was
earlier.
Talking about this about Brian White as a tight ends coach.
With Aaron Hernandez last year, yeah.
So this isn't something new. He just changed it a little bit.
No one out there knew that until you did.
You ruined it.
I'm selling him out. I got to bring him down.
I still think they both do it. I think Brian White did it with Aaron Hernandez,
but,
and now
so
he's going to do it
with inside him. Linebacker job was an obvious. We're going to try to make a use 3-4, even if it's not our main defense. A lot of 3-4 is going to be used.
How quickly you forget about Jordan Reed. He's obviously in on that power.
Des Parks is there.
No, he was redshirted. Yeah, dropping balls somewhere on the sideline.
Looking like a deer in the headlights.
I hope they go to the 3-4. It looks like it's definitely going to happen. And some of my favorite guys who haven't seen the field, I know most of us feel this way, are linebackers.
Yeah.
So it'd be cool to see some guys get some time who haven't. That way it kind of ensures guys like Brandon Hicks and Lorenzo Edwards, who we all like, would get on the field. Lorenzo Edwards came in as like the best linebacker at his position, and was like an Army All-American, and he hasn't seen the field at all in his first 3 years. So,
despite me hating on Willie Green earlier, this could be a great switch for him.
Yeah,
because he is a great outside. He'd be a great outside linebacker in the 3-4. He's really small, like much smaller than any defensive end should be, and would struggle being, you know, having his hand in the dirt and going up against offensive tackles. But coming from like 3-4 yards back, not knowing where he's coming from, would be a big advantage for him. I think he'll make the switch to outside linebacker if they go 3-4.
You said you could see Ronald Powell doing the same thing, right?
I mean, Ronald Powell is. I think he's a guy that you use wherever you need him. Like he can easily put him like coming in. He'll be probably the size of a 3-4 linebacker, but he can easily put on weight to get down. A good one would be running 3-4 and having him as an outside linebacker. And, you know, you can switch easily into a 4-3 just by making him, you know, be a down lineman.
Yeah,
he gives you some versatility. I don't know. Running him as a linebacker right away could be kind of iffy. Especially since it's hard enough making that switch, but it's even harder if you've played defensive end in high school where your only job description is rush the passer.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I feel like his future is at defensive end.
It probably is. But I think he
oh, what a future it is.
Oh, Jesus, it's a glory. He could be a tight end. He caught a touchdown pass in the All-American game.
I heard. Yeah. I mean, it got retweeted 1,000 times.
He also blocked the kick and returned it 100 yards.
Did he really?
Yeah, an extra point. He returned it all the way for 2 points. He's going to be incredible.
He does look like he's going to be awesome.
I've been singing his praises since I saw him at Friday Night Lights here this summer. And I won't take any of them back. I think he's going to be incredible. I think he could be a day one starter for Florida.
I mean, it's very possible.
So
I like him.
Yeah.
I mean, I like him better than I like Duke Clemens.
It's a bold stance, Bob.
I know.
Sure,
really
you want to take that back?
William Green could give him a fight, but remember, if they, I mean, they have the 3-4. Don't be surprised if they, I mean, they're going to probably bring back their, what's it called, package. The Joker package, where they have three defensive ends. He could easily fit in there. He can fit into outside linebacker. He'll be used. I don't know if he'll be a starter, but he will be used. Barring any injuries.
I think it could be the backup tight end. He could possibly be the starting tight end.
Yeah, I mean, he's competing with Dez Parkson. Well, I guess they're bringing in some people. Jared Christian, there's one other guy.
I hope he plays two ways. That'd be awesome.
So do I. I'm just excited I get to cover a team. Unless he does some crazy stuff and decommits or whatever and pulls a Matt Elam.
Yeah.
I'm excited to get to cover a team with Ronald Powell on it.
Who's back? Matt Elam is back. And who knows where he's going to play. Because besides him, they have two other safeties already committed. So he's thinking. I think someone said he's being told he's going to play running back. But they've got, I don't know. Who knows what he's being told? Who knows what's going on in that kid's mind?
I'll try to reserve judgment until I talk to Matt Elam in person, look him in the eye, see what he's all about. But as of right now,
I don't like him.
I don't like him. I hope he never sees the field. Like, I just don't like kids who act like this. This is like a prime example for how out of control recruiting is.
Yeah.
It's just like grown men chasing around children, being led on a wild goose chase by kids like Matt Elam, who are decommitting one day, recommitting the next, going to rival schools, stirring the pot. It's all a big joke. And they have so many safeties. The one I really like is Dorsey. What's his first name? DeMar?
DeMar Dorsey. Yeah.
I hope he gets a lot of playing time. He seems sweet, and Will Hill's going to be here a couple more years. So
Finley's still around.
Finley's still kicking around.
Exactly. What's his face? Josh Evans is around. I mean,
plus,
they've got safeties.
Black and Major, right?
Right. Whatever. That's the near future. It's only next year.
Oh, you're talking about that. All right, the future.
But Matt Elam, I hope you come here with a sense of entitlement that you've already shown and kind of get beat out by some guys. You're going to have to work hard once you actually get here. So
Dee Finley works you in practice.
That's right.
Because that's where positions are won in practice.
On Tuesday and Wednesday.
Oh, yes. Sources say. All right. Well, with all the little news stuff out of the way, let's do this. This is the football wrap-up podcast. Not quite the glorious spectacle I expected it to be. It's just kind of the three of us sitting around the microphone.
We left the pyrotechnics at home. So
you called Bill on us. Phil's no fun, so he didn't come.
So we got what we have, but we're gonna talk about this just sort of retrospective on the season as a whole. I want to talk about the highs, the lows for the team. We'll get to your guys' perspective on like sort of your personal highs and lows from your experiences. But let's just talk about the season as a whole, what you take from it. Obviously, you know, we talked about it last time, Kyle. It was a little bit of, you know, it was a disappointment as a whole. Bob, what's your perspective on that?
I mean, I was California dreaming. So I'm disappointed that we didn't go. I still had a great time, you know, covering the team, going places. I mean, everything, it sucks, with the media availability and all that stuff. And, you know, that's no fun. But, like, the road trips and all that stuff was great fun. I wouldn't have minded if they went 0-10, and we got to go on all the road trips still. Mm. So it was a great experience for me.
Let's do the personal stuff first, then, I guess, because that's what you're talking about right now. What was sort of the high point of the season for you from the reporter's perspective?
High point? Oh, man. I don't know.
I'm hitting you guys.
I got the low. My low point's easy. Low point is SEC championship game for me. I got Adam James stuck in a closet. It was actually a pretty nice room, but
Bobby Colobi is trapped in a closet.
There was miscommunication between me and my correspondent or my beat writer and
your correspondent.
And I didn't get my credential request didn't get in time, so I didn't get this in the press box. Instead, I was stuck in a room 3 floors below with a bunch of TV people who didn't really know what was going on.
And a boatload of food.
And a boatload of food. I think I put on a good 15, 20 pounds that one day.
Because
while what they didn't know is that they kept refreshing the food and bringing out new dishes. I got my personal Bobby. The food's ready if you want more. There was a good 3 chocolate cakes that came out. I'd say I had 3 or 4 pieces of that. It was not a good day for Bobby. And then after that, we went to, I mean, despite me being as full as I think I've ever been, everyone wanted to go to Glass Night and Ron Wine's Chicken and Waffles. I couldn't say no. That was an awful night. I mean, Glass Night was a great way to end it, but it was an awful night for me.
So that's your low.
Yeah, that was an easy low. I mean,
yeah,
that was no,
it really
there
is
was,
no,
was con- a, it was like, a no question.
Once you get trapped in a closet, it's like R. Kelly style.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I was trapped in the closet, and then, like, you know, the people would be like, it wasn't a closet, it was a nice room.
Was it the size of a 2-car garage?
It was a little bit smaller than a 2-car garage, the room I was stuck in.
Well, then Adam James would say it was the size of an electrical closet.
closet and it was dark.
I was allowed to roam a little bit, but I was constricted. I mean, I was told not to put my drink on a table because there's TV wires and I could short out the entire event, which I considered. I considered if I can't see this, I might just pull these plugs so everyone's going down with me. But you're welcome. Yeah. I didn't.
You're welcome. Well, Fowler thought he had a concussion and he thought the dark circumstances in the room would help him out. That's what the doctors told him. So it was just a big misunderstanding.
Yeah, he was safe the whole time. All right, he was safe. Like he could do his job. He was safe.
There was a nice machine. From what I understand,
it wasn't.
All right,
nice.
So you don't have, you got a high? You got any sort of high point?
I can't think of a high. The high, actually, no, I got my high. So when I was doing my cornerback story, and I had Joe Hayden. Joe Hayden was an easy. I knew they would bring out Joe Hayden. Let me talk. But then I was asking for Janoris, who never talks.
Janoris.
And Vance Bedford, another one who hates talking to the media. And nope. I was sitting
there. You don't have to worry about that anymore, do you?
No, no. But I was sitting there, and also Phil led me to believe that Vance Bedford sucks at talking. He hates the media, and he doesn't want to talk.
Sure.
And so I'm sitting there. It's dark. It was, you know, right after what daylight savings time, I get, you know, after that happened. So it was really dark at it. And I just see a figure, a shadowy figure, walking out. And sure enough, I hear Vance Bedford. I was like, no, I'm doing my Joe Hayden interview. I can't leave Joe Hayden because I need this as well. So I finish, and I see everyone dispersing from Vance Bedford. I think, oh, I don't got – like, how did I miss this? And he stands there like, am I done? And I walk over to him and ask, you know, can I have a few minutes? He says, sure. Mm. He already did an interview.
Yeah.
He does another, like, 8-10-minute interview with me in which he was great. One of the best coaches that we've had come out.
Wow.
And it was just pretty much one-on-one for most of the time. And it was fantastic. The next day, though, Brandon Spikes brought me right back down because I asked for Janoris again. And I said, you know, we got one unicorn. I got to see one unicorn in Vance Bedford. Maybe I'll get another unicorn today. Yeah. Instead, we did.
Oh, yeah, that's
we
right.
We did.
But it was.
Brandon Spikes came out, gave his 30-second apology, and bolted. No one else came out. I didn't get Janoris, but we did get to see two unicorns.
There you go. All right, Kyle, highs, lows from your perspective? There's so many lows.
So many lows, so many highs. I don't know whether to put fighting with Adazio as a high or a low.
Oh,
yeah, that just happened. Like,
I'll start.
If it was a one-time event, I'd put it as something. But it was a daily, it was a week-to-week basis, there was a fight with Adazio.
All right, I'm going to start with the high, I suppose.
All right.
I guess I'll throw out two. First was going on the field at LSU afterwards.
Oh,
they made the mistake of leaving the field open to us children when there's literally nobody else in the entire stadium
it's
except for us. It was really weird. And we get out there and we're taking pictures and playing with the flag that they left.
So, I went searching for signs to bring back to the office, and little did I know that giant LSU cheerleader flags just laying on the ground. I say, I know what I'm going to do with that one. So, of course, we start running the end zone with it. One of us, I'm not going to use the name, wanted to steal it, but it was way too big. It was, I'd say, what, like 20 by 20 or so at least?
Giant.
It was huge. There was no way we were going to be able to get out of there with that thing.
So, that was fun. The other high would probably be, from a journalistic standpoint, breaking the Tebow story that got linked on ESPN by Chris Lowe. That they had no idea about, so I felt good about that. And at the Superdome for the Sugar Bowl, Joe Shad ended up sitting at our table for dinner, and he's kind of like, which one of you guys wrote the story? And I had kind of sheepishly say, I did, and he was like, oh, you really killed us on that story. And I felt good that I killed ESPN.
Yeah, you should.
So that was my high from that standpoint.
Sometimes ESPN deserves to die, and you killed them one time.
Thank you.
In that phrase, Joe Shad said, who broke? And I immediately pointed to Kyle because he's the only one who broke anything this year. And then he acted like, you don't even know what I'm going to say. I'm going to finish my statement. Finishes it. And then we still point to Kyle. He had just said, who broke? And he knew what was coming.
Who broke?
All right. And the low, not too many lows. I had a good time this year. I had a similar credential situation as Bob that ended up not going poorly. So sorry, Bob. But, also at LSU, oddly enough, somehow my credential was lost in transit. Like, Ben said that he didn't get it, but they said they sent it to Ben, my Palm Beach Post guy. And the guy who was, like, checking us in is being a real words I can't say on this podcast.
You know what.
Yeah, a meanie
head. You know
head.
What. A poop head. Yeah. And he was just, like, really reluctant to let me in, giving me all this crap. It took us, like, an extra 10-15 minutes down there He gave me a temp credential finally, and we got up into the press box, thank God. And the SID ended up being really nice. He acted as if the SID was, like, angry. He's like, he's not buying your story.
That was the best part.
And then when I got up there, he's like, oh, I'm really sorry for everything. Like,
I totally buy your story.
Yeah, so that was awkward. So I guess I'll go with that as the low. I can't really think of anything else.
Yeah, you guys came back.
Oh, no. The car? Are you going to go with that?
Oh, I wasn't even going to say the car incident. Oh, man, how could I forget about right, the car? Another LSU trip.
The quick car rundown. I drove my car to LSU. I'm a complete retard. I'm maybe the dumbest person in the entire world. And without going into much detail, I ran over a parking stanza. Tires were a little bit out of whack, where there was a lot of panic. A fiasco ensued where we got a bad tire gauge and that let more air out. So that, it delayed us about an hour without getting into a super long story.
I just remember you guys came back from the LSU trip and it was like Bourbon Street was awesome. Like that whole thing, New Orleans was great. That it's like everything else about like the trip itself and like the logistics of it sucked. Like the LSU people like were just mean and like they didn't like let you guys in or whatever. But
since I didn't get to actually play many sports just because covering the team took a lot of time working in the office, the LSU happened to be one of my more athletic moves. As I'm about to step in a huge thing, one foot is already in the process, in the air, about to step in a nice pile of puke. Someone warns me, just enough time for me to push off my one foot that's on the ground and jump my way over the pile of puke. It was a very good athletic. Yeah, I wish everyone could have been there to watch it. You would have gotten to see my athletic prowess in action. But yeah, LSU was a great trip, despite, you know, everyone getting screwed and everyone being mean to us.
Yeah. See, in this YouTube era, I'm always disappointed when stuff like that isn't captured on film.
Did you have some other kind of low you were going to throw out there?
No, I was just going to point out my athletic prowess.
Oh, all right. Well.
Yeah, you raised your hand during a potential low. So.
Yeah, no. It just reminded me of the puke and... Because that was the process of where no one tells us where the how we can get our credentials and where like the media entrance was. That was my I was making my way over to someone who looks like he might know. In my process, like he looked and like Kyle, I think, said something as I was like literally like 3 or 4 inches away from stepping in a huge bio pew.
If there's one thing I've learned, and it's something I'm not looking forward to dealing with in the future with football, is that nobody ever knows what they're talking about in terms of getting you in the door. I have a Tariq Al-Kamil all-access pass to prove it.
Mississippi State was also a really bad one, where no one knew what was going on, and we were just guessing. Like we were pretty much going like gate to gate trying to figure out if we're allowed in.
Yeah. All right, well,
just being in Starkville really is a low.
I was going to say, I thought somebody was going to mention that, but I remember you guys came back from Starkville and said, like,
we didn't stay in Starkville. That was when we stayed in Hoover, which is great. We also got Dreamland Barbecue. So that trip wasn't that bad. That was actually a pretty good trip. I also got to watch a Hoover high school football game.
That trip,
that was a great trip for me.
I sat that one out.
He sat it out. That was pretty lame of him. The big mistake I made,
I don't
though,
like high school boys like
was
you do,
I went to the high school football
fatties.
Game, and it was like, I'd say it was like 40 degrees or so, 40, 50 degrees that night, and I was in shorts and a t-shirt. And for some reason, Pelham High School, because it was a away game for Hoover, Pelham High School doesn't sell sweatshirts, so I couldn't even buy one.
40, 50 degrees, wah. It was 3 degrees in Nashville this weekend.
Were you in shorts and a t-shirt?
No, but it doesn't matter, man.
Exactly.
The elements, no matter what, they're going to get the best of you when it's 3 degrees outside. All right, so those are the personal highs and lows. Let's look back
Enough of that.
Enough of that. Let's talk about Florida season and what they're going to view from it, what they're going to take from it. Highs and lows, successes, disappointments. What were the positives? What were the negatives? Obviously, the negatives.
The high was the FSU game. I mean, it was a great way to send off the seniors in the swamp. It was. I mean, you romped Bobby Bowden in his last like. Game against UF. There couldn't have been a better way to finish like the regular season than with that game. The low, well, I don't think low was the same low for me. They knew I wasn't in the press box. They were all upset. They're like, why can't, like, what happened to Bobby? Like, why isn't he up there? Why has he got stuck in this closet? And they couldn't play. That's why they couldn't concentrate, because of me. And I apologize. I'm sorry that, I mean, it really should be Fowler that should be apologizing, because he made that team lose.
The low is obviously the SEC championship game. Also brings me to another one of my potential lows, which is writing a huge defense feature right before they totally crap the bed. I couldn't have picked a safer feature.
No.
Like, in the 4 years I've been here, I've never written a safer feature, and it all went bad, of course. No. So that was obviously the low for the defense to just collapse like that. I'm inclined to agree with Bobby on FSU being the high, although, you know, the Sugar Bowl didn't count or anything, but that was a pretty good high, especially just for Tebow's sake. Yeah. Like, I don't really care that the team won, but Tebow had such a great game as his last game to cap a really mediocre season for him. So I'm torn between those two.
That's what I was going to say. There were, you know, there was the one obviously huge low, but I feel like it was sort of a season of lows disguised as highs that brought everybody to that point. Right. It was a season of, like, mediocre victories and, like, the offense not capitalizing on everything, mm-hmm. and everybody just sort of saying, well, you know, one game at a time, whatever. They'll fix everything next week. Potential, you know, signs of potential, like Kentucky when they went out and just scored a ton of points, and Florida State when they went out and scored a ton of points. But, like, the whole thing, I view, is just very disappointing.
The other low we should mention would be Tebow being concussed at Kentucky.
Yeah.
That was a pretty big low. So
yeah, that was a low.
He bounced back pretty quickly, maybe a little too quickly.
Some
medically.
Might say.
But, you know, he came back, and he didn't really have one of his better years. I'm not saying it's because of the concussion, but it certainly didn't help.
Mm. I mean, I think that the Sugar Bowl and the FSU game, it kind of, to me, it just shows how great SEC defenses are. Mm. You know, SEC defense, even the supposed bad defense in SEC, were able to give, you know, the UF's offense trouble, which UF's offense this year just wasn't good. It struggled, especially in the red zone. But those teams figured out a way to stop them. FSU and Cincy had no answers. They couldn't figure out how to stop this offense that really was not as good as it appeared in those two games.
All right, well, let's talk, you know, we're talking about surprise and disappointments or whatever. Let's talk about one player each, because we did sleepers and busts at the beginning of the year, which we're going to revisit later. One player who surprised you being good and one player who was disappointing to you throughout the season.
Surprising.
I can do the surprising good first. I think it's Riley Cooper for me. I did not expect that out of him. We all said David Nelson was going to lead the team in receptions, and so, you know, with Aaron Hernandez. And then Cooper came out and had a great year, potentially vaulted himself into the NFL. So I think we have to give him his props there.
A.J. Jones.
That's what I was going
to
say.
I always considered A.J. Jones. My question every game up to the season was, why is A.J. Jones starting? There's got to be someone better than A.J. Jones. And this year, there actually was no one better at A.J. Jones at his position. Mm. I mean, Brandon Hicks played really well when he got in there, but A.J. Jones was really good all season. So he surprised me. Do you want my bad now?
Yeah.
My bad now. Oh, man, this is a lot tougher.
It is funny to think about, because it's like,
I mean, Tebow and David Nelson are both up there.
Yeah.
But I'll go David Nelson. I didn't expect, like, great things out of him. I didn't expect him to be the leading receiver, but I expected him to be a capable receiver.
Yeah.
Someone who could, you know, get 5 or 6 catches a game, and said he was lucky if he got one. So,
well, Riley Cooper and A.J. Jones were definitely the two. I was going to say A.J. Jones, and Cooper would have been my second choice.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm going to really reach here and just throw another name out there. I thought Trotta had a really good year. I didn't expect a lot from him being like a backup, mm-hmm. and he made a lot of big plays this year, so I'll throw him a nod there.
Yeah, that's good.
As far as guys who are disappointing, I mean, you could just go down the line pretty much. I'll spare anybody off the defense. They had a really good year. Spikes, although it was sort of disappointing, but he was hampered by injury.
Yeah,
so
he was good when he was there.
Right, exactly. So pretty much anybody you want on offense you could take, especially the other receivers.
Yeah.
I'll go Brandon James. Why not?
I was about to go
as
with
a
him,
double
yeah.
whammy, because not only did he get, you know, 4 yards a catch or whatever he was doing on offense, but he really did nothing in the return game the whole season long. So, Brandon James, you're my disappointment.
Actually, I was going to say David Nelson and Brandon James were my top two, because David Nelson he fooled us all. I think we all thought he was going to be a real receiver. He was just David Nelson again. Right. And Brandon James, like, for the supposed, like, huge difference maker, and, you know, he's an explosive guy, he's a playmaker.
He didn't make a play all year.
No, not at all. Yeah. So it's like,
oh, against Charleston Southern, I'm sorry.
So it's like he didn't make a meaningful play, like, all year in a game that counted. And that's not a difference maker to me. You're not a difference maker if you can't actually step up
he
when
made
it counts.
No difference.
Yeah, exactly. Huh. He was irrelevant, almost.
He might have made negative.
Except
difference.
For, taking carries away and plays away from Jeff Debs and Chris Rain.
And, I mean, obviously, once again, Cincinnati's defense was a lot worse than the SEC defense they faced. But Rainey did a much better job, because he did, I mean, until he had to kind of fill in for Demps when he got hurt. But, I mean, even sometimes he was out there in the slot playing the role that Brandon James was. And he was better than Brandon James in that one game.
Yeah.
And he returned the ball better than Brandon James had all season. I mean, that showed you that, for me, that showed me that it obviously wasn't the scheme. It wasn't how they were using Brandon James. It was Brandon James.
Mm. One concept, this is like a like a thing that happened that I'm disappointed in. The defense didn't score a whole lot of touchdowns. At one point before the year, we had so much hope. Like, this defense is just going to like score touchdowns and pick sixes and scooping scores all over the place. What was the final? Two?
Two.
They scored two defensive touchdowns.
Dustin Doe and Brandon Spikes.
So we can talk about how consistent the defense was and how good they were, but in terms of making like those game-changing, you know, plays and, you know, scoring plays like that, they didn't make a whole lot of them this year. Fewer than last year, even. It's certainly weird to look back on, because I've you know, I always felt like the defense was consistent and consistently great until Alabama. So
yeah, but I mean, scores are somewhat lucky.
You
can't always. I mean, Brandon Spikes' his touchdown. You can't always get that play. You know, that was just a gimme touchdown.
Play zero.
And the sad part though was that if they didn't throw it to, if Brandon Spikes did not get in the way of it, Janoris Jenkins was already in front of the wide receiver.
Yeah,
he would have gotten a pick six as well. That play was doomed from the get go. But I mean, it's all luck based for those. You got to put yourself in the right position, but it's got to be on the right route. Something in the flat, an out route, anything like that, where you catch and there's literally no one in front of you. Because most defensive players are not going to make a bunch of guys miss. Chaddow's probably should have been a touchdown, but Major Wright tackled him.
Cunningham.
Oh, sorry. I always think Major Wright. It was Jermaine Cunningham that tackled him. I think Ahmad Black had a touchdown that was called back against Mississippi State. And who else? A.J. Jones might have been able to get a touchdown against Georgia, but he dove for the ball instead of trying to stay on his feet. But then he might not have gotten an interception. So there's a couple that could have.
They just didn't.
But, like, it's very hard to score defensively. And, I mean, you can't expect what they did last season where they had, what, like six or seven?
Yeah. All right, and this is the part of the show where you can get ready to laugh at us. We're certainly going to laugh at ourselves a little bit. We had
how awesome we are.
Even when we're wrong, we're right.
Can we only do our good predictions?
No, because I tell the truth here. The truth is blind, Bob. It sees nothing or everything.
The truth is that we did well on some.
Yes, the truth is that we did well on some. And the truth is also
we don't
that
have
we
to
did
give the whole
on
truth.
Others.
Just some truth.
I'm all about telling the whole truth, Bob.
Nothing That's, but the truth.
Back before the season started, we did two podcasts. We did a college football preview where we talked about stuff that we saw coming for the national scene and for the SEC. We split that up in half. And then we did another one where we talked about the Florida season preview. And if you ever just want to have a good laugh, have a good chuckle, possibly at our expense, go back and listen to them. Some of the stuff we said was really, we were drinking some Kool-Aid, some hardcore Kool-Aid before the season for Florida. So we made some outrageous stuff, some outrageous predictions. But we'll start with the Florida stuff that we said. We'll start with the sleepers and busts. Mike McCall said that Emmanuel Moody was a sleeper. I think he just wanted to believe so badly in Emmanuel Moody. Moody finished the year with 378 rushing yards and three touchdowns. I don't know what we expected him to do, but I wouldn't quite view him as the biggest of sleepers, and I feel like a lot of that was garbage time.
He had 6.5 yards a carry. He made most of when he was allowed to run the ball. He just wasn't given many touches.
He was put to sleep, is the thing. He was put to sleep by Urban Meyer. Like, he just kept...
just choked out.
He just kept feeding him sleeping pills and, like, wouldn't let him wake up. Because when he was out there, he was
pretty
good.
Well, yeah.
And McCall, maybe the worst bust of all of us, he said Riley Cooper.
I mean, that was pretty right.
That's definitely the worst bust.
Yeah, 961 yards, 9 touchdowns, 51 receptions, 18.8 yards per reception. Great season for Riley Cooper. That's hard to look back at. But I arguably had the worst sleeper of all time that anyone will ever say.
He's pretty bad.
You ready for this? Jeremy Brown.
He's close, though. He's close.
He's close.
He's still close. I wonder if he'll still be close come spring football.
I think he'll probably be close come spring football,
Jeremy
yeah.
Brown.
I wanted to believe in him so badly that he'd at least step up in that third corner spot and, like, make a couple of plays. But he just hurt all year and just never did anything. My bust, though, was rather prescient. I said Deontay Thompson, who I nicknamed Deontay Dropson at the beginning of the year because he was such a bust.
Yeah, he sucked.
So what he finished with, 343 yards, 4 touchdowns, and a heap of disappointment.
He played really well in the Sugar Bowl. I mean, most people did.
Everybody
did. He played really well. It was somewhat, it was good to see for next year. He's going to have to be good next year.
Yeah. All right. And then Phil Kegler, who we will be getting to later for some of the worst predictions of all time, said Frankie Hammond Jr. was his sleeper. He's still sleeping. He had 4 receptions for 57 yards on the year. Next year.
He had a touchdown.
Next year. Next year for Frankie Hammond. I think we can all look forward to bigger things. His bust was Chris Rainey, who, I don't know, I can't even look at Chris Rainey in an unbiased perspective just because of the prediction I made about him, which we'll get to in a second. But I don't know, how do you view Chris Rainey's year?
It was disappointing, but I want to call him a bust.
Yeah.
Bob and I had a fight about this earlier. Yeah.
Is that right?
There's no chance I'm calling Chris Rainey's season a bust.
Yeah.
I don't call it a bust, well. I don't call it a success.
But it wasn't a bust. I don't know. He didn't have a bad year. 575.
All right, so he did
five touchdowns.
He had slightly less yards than last year, but he had 6.5 yards to carry. Yeah. I don't
but
know.
That was down from last year as well.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I thought he did well, though.
Yeah. So. Like, he was never really disappointing, but I never was like, wow, Chris Rainey.
He did make our top three for Swamp Studs.
He wasn't a wild success. If you picked him as your sleeper, that wouldn't have scored. Yeah.
I wouldn't even count that as your sleeper just because he was good last year.
Yeah. But then picking him as your bust, I think we can agree was wrong.
Okay.
Kyle, your sleeper? Deontay Thompson.
Well, can't be more wrong than Deontay Thompson, unless I would have picked, like,
Jeremy
Brown. James
Jeremy Brown.
You're right, I could have been more wrong. Good.
Or Frank Hammond.
Wow, so I didn't even have the...
You didn't have the second...
You had arguably the second best sleeper, and you couldn't have been more wrong.
Well, that's a really sad testament to what we do here.
And your bust was Ahmad Black, who, beginning of the year, things weren't panning out, obviously, for him, but then he sort of... But he got back on the train, played a lot, so I don't know. How do you view his year?
I think he's in the Chris Rainey camp, which is why me and Bob had this fight. It was Ahmad Black versus Chris Rainey. It kind of depends on what your expectations were for them. Both of them did worse than last year.
Yeah.
And I don't know. He obviously kept his job.
Yeah.
So which went differently than maybe we saw it going down. Yeah. But both of them were kind of in the middle somewhere.
Mm. All right, then we did this. I'll go ahead and do the outrageous season predictions just because I want to get this one out of the way. I said in my outrageous prediction that Chris Rainey would rush for 1,000 yards.
He was halfway there.
A little over halfway there, actually. I don't know. I expected Demps and Rainey to just get a gross amount of carries. I didn't expect Tebow to get as many carries as the two of them combined, 217 to 99 plus 89. I didn't expect that. I didn't see that coming. So, you know, you give Chris Rainey 50 more carries, who knows what happens. He probably wouldn't get 1,000 yards.
Probably get 10 yards a carry. Get you 1,000 yards.
Yeah, I like to think that's on the table. But... you know, that didn't pan out for me. McCall said that Lorenzo Edwards would end the season with more touchdowns than Carl Moore.
Close.
It was a push.
Yeah.
He said Edwards would score on a scoop and score, and Moore would play in 5 games and not score. Turns out he overvalued Carl Moore's value to the team.
Right.
So, 0-2. Phil said in the least outrageous prediction of all time that the defense would score more touchdowns than any one of Deontay Thompson, Riley Cooper, or David Nelson. As it turns out, it was close. David Nelson scored 2 touchdowns, and the defense scored 2 touchdowns. So they didn't score more, but they scored just as many.
Wait, so he wasn't saying then any of them individually. He was saying then one of those guys?
Then one of those guys.
That's ridiculous.
That's why it was so not outrageous, because we were like, you know, at the time, we were like, Riley Cooper's not going to score a lot of touchdowns. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And as it turns out, David Nelson didn't score as many as the defense. Kyle, you predicted that Jeff Demps would score at least 1 touchdown in every game he plays.
He had it going for the
He did, for about half, yeah, for like
4 or 5 in a row.
4 or 5, yeah, at the beginning of the season. The Jeff Demps love from you at the beginning of the season was incredible.
It's all still there. I love him just as much.
You also predicted, and this wasn't official or anything, that the UF defense and special teams would score more touchdowns than the defense allows. And at one point at the beginning of the year,
close.
It was like...
No, not even the beginning of the year. Like, throughout, like, up until... Pretty close to the end. That was very close.
Yeah. So those were outrageous predictions. We did this thing also called the name game, where we went through and valued players up against each other and predicted where they would end. I'm going to need some official stats from you guys on this one. But for sacks, we were pretty well split. Phil and myself said that Jermaine Cunningham would lead the team. Kyle, you and McCall said Dunlap.
Led with 9. Cunningham at 7.
So
I think heading into the last game, they both had 7.
Yeah.
Count it. And Dunlap missed the game.
That suspension
also
almost.
Cunningham also,
yeah, but that suspension for him almost like pushed me over the edge. I was like, I could have had this one. This one is arguably the hardest one to look back at and with any sense of pride. In terms of receptions, what we said, I'll just say that Phil said that David Nelson would lead the team in receptions.
I think we all discounted Aaron Hernandez on this one.
No, right? Hernandez was involved. Phil said Nelson, Hernandez, Cooper.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
You said. Hernandez, Thompson, Nelson, Cooper.
Hernandez, Thompson, Nelson, Cooper.
Yeah.
Mixed results.
McCall said Hernandez, Nelson, Thompson, Cooper. And I said Hernandez, Nelson, Cooper, Thompson.
Hernandez, Nelson.
It went Hernandez, Cooper, Hernandez, Cooper, Nelson, Thompson.
So nobody wins. as is the universal truth in life, everyone loses.
Phil loses the most.
Phil loses the most just because he didn't put Hernandez first, which we all did. That was one thing I think we all saw coming. I don't think any of us saw the fact that it was going to be a two-man receiving core.
No, absolutely not.
In Hernandez and Cooper. And then for the next one, we had rushing yards. Phil had Tebow, Demps, Moody, Rainey. Almost had it. Obviously, Rainey finished with more than Moody, but otherwise his order was correct. Kyle, you said Demps and Rainey. For some reason, Tebow and Moody were not involved in your prediction. But I feel like you probably said Tebow would. I don't know.
There's no way I said Tebow was going to outrush him.
The Jeff Demps love would probably so intense at the time.
I probably would have said Demps, Rainey, Tebow, Moody.
Mm. And then obviously that happened. McCall said Tebow, Demps, Rainey, Moody. So somebody's got to be right here, and it turned out to be McCall. I said Tebow, Rainey, Demps, Moody. I don't know why I believed in Chris Rainey so much, man. That was foolish from the beginning. We did something interesting where we said Demps and Rainey touchdowns versus opponent touchdowns. I don't actually know how this one played out. Demps and Rainey combined for 12. I'm going to assume
that it's close.
Alabama alone scored. Scored so
12
many
touchdowns.
Yeah. That's really close. Well, I don't know the answer to this,
Bobby.
Oh, because Cincinnati scored.
Garbage touchdowns. Which really hurt in the end. So
I can't get.
We don't have an official. We don't have an official one on this one.
Judges.
Can we get a feel? My gut on this one says
these judges. They sit in this room every podcast, and we only need them on select occasions, and they just don't come through for us.
Yeah, Bob is calculating. Bob's doing schoolboy math by hand. It's fun, but I'll just go ahead and say it, then we get the official results. Phil said Demps and Rainey would score more. Kyle, you said Demps and Rainey would score more. McCall said opponents would score more, and I said Demps and Rainey would score more.
It's either 15 or 16. I'm not exactly sure.
All right, so opponents scored more. So there you go. It's funny how close that turned out to be, though. You know, maybe Cincinnati doesn't score a couple garbage touchdowns. Alabama doesn't go nuts. We're looking at the competition there.
Or Demps and Rainey get a couple more.
Demps and Rainey, you know. Tebow doesn't score 14 freaking rushing touchdowns.
Oh, wait. Rainey also had a receiving touchdown.
Oh, wow.
They may or may not have had multiple receiving touchdowns.
Demps had none. Rainey had
one. And Rainey fell on one in the end zone.
That's right.
On a block punt.
It could be 15-15.
Oh, God.
This is going to be something. We're going to talk about this later. We'll go do some math on this after the show.
We'll light a fire under the judge's ass and see if we can get an answer.
Yeah. All right. And then the next one was, it was more touchdowns, Moody or Joe Hayden.
Moody won.
Moody wins.
Hayden did not score.
Thanks for that, Joe Hayden, you NFL-bound fool. And then we did most interceptions. What was the final count on the interceptions? Phil said Hayden. Kyle, you said Will Hill.
Count it.
McCall said Janoris Jenkins, and I also said Joe Hayden.
Joe Hayden with 4. Second place would be Major Wright with 3. And then there was a couple with 2. Will Hill.
How many
had,
Will?
Will had 0.
AJ Jones had 3 also, I'm pretty sure.
AJ Jones had 3.
Yeah.
Impressive. So, I don't know, a mixed bag of results from the name game. I don't really know how I feel about all of this. Like,
I thought we were playing golf on the interception one. Yeah. Will Hill shot at 0. Impressive.
Well done by him. All right, and then what do we want to move to next here? We want to go to the SEC or National? We've got our own separate pages here so we can read some embarrassing predictions. Who wants to jump in here? I'm tired of talking.
I got to sit that one out since I wasn't on that podcast. I was on the next two, so we'll get a lot. We'll start with National.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go conference by conference, our predictions. We'll start with ACC, which, of course, was my...
Oh, funny. Funny you would start with the ACC,
Well, I mean,
Bobby.
It happens to be at the top, but this is also be my pride and joy here. Everyone else said Virginia Tech over FSU. Bobby said Georgia Tech over Clemson. In case anyone was wondering, that was how it panned out at the ACC championship.
Correct.
Big Ten, we'll skip over the Big Ten.
nope. Why don't we do the Big Ten?
Why are we skipping over the Big Ten,
Adam,
Bob?
Adam liked Terrell Pryor.
I did.
That's all it says. Adam likes Pryor.
Yeah, I took
Pryor.
Random notes.
Adam and Kyle went with Ohio State, which...
Nice.
That's correct. Bobby said Penn State. That was wrong. I have too much faith in Joe Bob.
Yeah, you did.
Big 12, Bobby and Adam went with Texas over Kansas. So close. Mangino kind of went crazy. Kyle had Oklahoma over Kansas.
Not my fault.
Yeah, not your fault. Big East.
The Oklahoma thing from you is hilarious at the beginning because it's like, I like where I'm standing. You're like, if I'm right, then I'm the only person who's right. Yeah. You're like, and if I'm wrong, who cares? Yeah.
And now it's even more who cares because their
cares.
Two best players got hurt.
Yeah.
No one knows how that season would have played out.
The Big East is another one we're going to skip over.
Why is that?
Well, Kyle and Adam correctly picked Cincinnati.
That's right. We did.
Rutgers was nipping at the heels the entire season. And by that, I mean after the first game, it was, and that was who I was picked, my Scarlet Knights. Mountain West, we all did well. TCU, my Horned Frogs, unfortunately, they lost to Cal's
Boise unfortunately?
State. Yeah, it was unfortunately.
Nope.
It wasn't unfortunately?
Nope.
I thought you had something more to say than no.
No.
Pac-10, Kyle and Bobby.
Quack,
Oregon.
Quack.
It's the worst executed fist pound of all time.
I was just pumping my fist, and I think Bob confused it for an attempted fist pound.
A terrorist fist jab.
Adam, I'm with USC. How'd that look for you?
That's great. I think they finished
the
sixth.
The underrated team, I'm glad I'm going to this one next. This was another great one. We'll go with me last.
Oh, no.
Adam said FSU, potentially a top 12 team. UF's toughest game.
He said potentially.
Yeah.
I was pressured into saying top 10 team. Jesus.
Kyle, Oregon State, something, I can't read it.
Not bad.
I think you said they'd finished third in the Pac-10.
Third in the Pac-10.
I don't know.
I think they were second. Bobby, though.
They had a chance to go to the Rose Bowl in the last game.
You can't ask for more than that. In terms
Bobby's underrated team was Clemson, who everyone was hating on. Said, we'll get to the ACC Championship, which they did. And I also said, big year for C.J. Spiller. It was, in fact, a big year for C.J. Spiller.
Speaking of which, I have a quote from Kyle about C.J. Spiller.
This is all true. Was it my statement of fact?
No. His statement's true.
Rainey statement of fact.
Because that was a statement of fact. Chris Rainey rushed for more yards last season than C.J. Spiller.
It says, I don't like C.J. Spiller all that much. To me, he's been all hype and not a whole lot of production.
He was.
He said he didn't like C.J. Spiller.
I didn't like C.J. Spiller. I was wrong. C.J. Spiller had a great year. I wouldn't have said he was going to have as good a year as he did. But at the time, C.J. Spiller was overrated, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah. All right, we got to
get
you
out. Now I hope the Dolphins draft him.
We got to get you out of here soon, right, so go ahead and read your predictions. Yeah.
Overrated teams, we all did very well. Bobby picked Cal. I'd say they were pretty overrated. They didn't do anything. Defer picked Ole Miss, so we still have his thing on here.
Yeah.
I picked Notre Dame.
That's correct.
Who, obviously, Notre Dame, terrible year. Very proud of that one. Adam picked the SEC.
But I mentioned these two teams in particular.
You mentioned two teams.
You mentioned the right teams, Georgia and LSU.
No, Adam's the one that made the notes, so this could be a little skewed.
Right. No, I remember, because I went back and I was like, I said the SEC, and I said Georgia, who was ranked like 18 to start the year, I want to say, and LSU was ranked like top 10 to start the year. So that, to me, was overrated, and it turns out neither had exceptional years. Right. I'm going to stand by that.
I agree with you on both of those, and they both kind of flopped.
So. The SEC as a whole was not like a
They were down a little bit, but they did win a national championship in a Sugar Bowl, so it's tough to hate on them too much.
Yeah.
All right, Heisman talk, Bobby, Tebow, Adam, McCoy, Kyle, Mark Ingram. Isn't that funny? Oh, yeah. No, I took Tebow. I thought Tebow was going to get it.
Well, we all got finalists, so good job. Everyone, way to go. Finalists because they were preseason favorites.
The funny thing is, if you listen
none
back
of us took Bradford. That's important. None of us took
Bradford. I was
going
to say, if you listen back to this, it was like, I don't really have to talk about anybody else because it's going to be Tebow, McCoy, Bradford, right, guys? And it was like,
no one picked Bradford.
All right, bold projections. This is the big money.
This is where the money's at.
All right. I don't want to run down the individual matchups is going to take too long. It doesn't matter. So I'll just go who got the teams that right and who got wrong.
Yeah.
So BCS teams. Well, first we'll go with the title game, I guess. So Bobby had Florida over Texas in the title game. Not quite. He did have Texas losing, though.
Yeah.
His BCS teams that he got right, he had Georgia Tech, Ohio State, USC, Alabama, Oregon, Florida, and Texas. So 7 out of 10.
Impressive.
His wrong teams, Rutgers, Oklahoma State, and Penn State. Okay, so pretty good job.
One of those is reasonable.
Rutgers is hilarious. All right, Kyle. So I had Cincinnati, Texas, Boise State, Ohio State, Oregon, and Florida. And am I missing one?
I got six on that count.
No, I guess I may have only had six. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, no, I only had six.
I had six as well.
My misses were Virginia Tech. I think it's counting USC for us. That's a problem.
Oh. All
right. My misses were Virginia Tech, USC, Ole Miss, and Oklahoma.
Ole Miss was just one big miss this year, like, for all of us.
I'm most upset with maybe Virginia Tech. I don't know. I really believed in Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
I had no faith.
The Oklahoma thing's a throwaway. I don't feel bad about that. Yeah. USC, I thought they would not win, but I thought they'd do better than they did.
Yeah, you had them as an at-large.
Right. And
can we change Ole Miss's name to Big Miss? Because that was
screw them. All right. And then Adam.
You find yourself hilarious.
I do.
Oh, and my championship game was Florida over Oklahoma. Count that one.
You had an SEC team beating a Big 12 team.
Close enough.
Good job.
Just the wrong ones.
Yeah.
All right. Adam had Cincinnati, correct. Boise State, correct. Yeah. TCU.
Yeah, Ohio, both of them. Both of them.
Ohio, I'm upset I didn't put my Horned Frogs
Ohio
in.
Ohio State, Texas, and Florida. So you also had six. I think kind of USC. So Bob actually won that one. You had the most BCS teams.
That's pretty good, Bobby.
Adam, his misses were Virginia Tech, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, and USC. So the exact same misses that I had.
Yeah.
So we had a little bit of mixed results on there. Your championship game, Texas over Florida. You got Texas in
I believe so strongly in that theory of Florida being
Many
the old
people subscribe
USC.
To the Texas over Florida theory. Yeah. But SEC will win. You just got to pick the right SEC team every year.
All right, we're going to move on here and revisit our SEC predictions. We've lost Kyle. He had to go make it to class because that's what we are here. We're good students at Alligator Sports.
Good, not really.
Good students and damn fine journalists. That's what we are here at Alligator Sports. But we made some SEC predictions. I believe that part of the podcast was myself, Bobby, conveniently, Phil, and McCall. So going to be some interesting stuff to look forward to here. Phil, this is just random stuff. Phil said he was not buying South Carolina, making bowl eligibility. He said, quote, I could see them at 4-8. They finished 7-6. Enjoy that, Phil. He also said he could see Vanderbilt fighting for bowl eligibility. Vanderbilt's final record was 2-10, and they did not win an SEC game. So I don't know if you necessarily want to believe Phil's preseason SEC predictions going forward.
I don't think I ever want to believe Phil.
Just period.
Yeah, no, in general. If Phil tells you something, you're going to have to take that with a grain of salt.
Well, one team that we were all really down on was Auburn at the beginning of the year. Yeah, you, Bob, were so down.
I still hate Auburn.
We also, like, the thing is, I think we just didn't know what to expect because we also, like, Auburn's going to be boring and, like, we didn't know what to expect from them. You expected them to be bad, in fact. So bad that you said they would be worse than Mississippi State. You said Mississippi State's going to be bad, quote, but not as bad as Auburn, end quote. Auburn finished 8-5. Mississippi State finished 5-7. However, to your credit, they both finished 3-5 in the SEC.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
Sure. And one of my favorite instances of Phil being wrong, he said, I think Ole Miss could beat Mississippi State by 50 points. And then he later said, they'll win by 60 points. The final score of the Egg Bowl was Mississippi State 41, Ole Miss 27.
I was the only person low on Ole Miss. Everyone else was drinking that Kool-Aid.
That's really to your credit.
I said I don't like them. I wanted to put them as my most overrated team, but I think someone else took them, so I went with Clemson, with Cal.
With Cal,
I was
right
about that one as well.
Yeah, we were all drinking the Ole Miss Kool-Aid.
We did much better, I think, on a national scene than
oddly enough,
the SEC.
Did, which
we should probably have done better on. We did much better. We didn't.
Yeah,
we
which it's a little strange. But a couple things that we were right on, actually, and none of these were really that big of stretches. We gave some SEC players to watch before the year. I said Dexter McCluster, who I love, and I still love. I just love watching him play. He finished with, I think it's about almost 1,200 rushing yards, 8 touchdowns, over 500 receiving yards, a couple touchdowns, 3 or 4 touchdowns there.
He's
so
great.
He's a great player.
I want to see what he does in the NFL. It'll be interesting.
He's so small.
He's small, and he doesn't really have a position.
No.
I don't know what he does, but I think he does something. He's good.
He's talented. Like, he's a playmaker.
Whoever gets him should model it somewhat after, I think, after how the Saints are using Reggie Bush.
Bush, yeah.
But don't call him a running back. Call him a wide receiver. Call him a slash. Call him whatever you want.
Yeah.
Don't call him a running back. And
it's just too much pressure.
Kind of use him a little bit of both.
Yeah. All right, players to watch. You said Julio Jones, who it's interesting to look at him because he finished with, 43 receptions of almost 600 yards and 4 touchdowns. He's always a threat, and he's always good, but in terms of pure, like, production, statistical production, Alabama's offense obviously didn't really allow him to dominate like you would expect, a player to watch.
Yeah, I mean, they don't throw too often, and when they did throw, he was being double-covered. I think this was really, he probably got a lot of it towards the end of last season, but this was the first season where he's been covered pretty much every play, and he's got to learn how to fight through it. That'll be one of the things that going moving forward, because from now on, the rest of his career, he's
going
to
be
a double team.
Covered, yeah.
He's going to be double covered, and he's going to have to learn how to get open despite of it.
Yeah. Another guy, you said A.J. Green, who finished the year with 53 receptions. I think this says 808 yards, about 6 touchdowns. Georgia, to me, was such a disappointment that it's like hard to judge how anybody for them did.
He was playing in Georgia, which is he had Joe Cox thrown to him, which is never good. And he his worst game though was against Florida when he had 50 yards. So, he's good every game. He didn't have the great season that I kind of expected him to.
Not bad stats, 800 yards, 6 touchdowns, but not like a breakout huge. Not one of the best receivers in the nation.
He did have one of the best catches this season.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You also said Eric Berry, which was possibly the safest pick of anybody.
Yeah, but we weren't picking breakout players. We were playing just
players to watch.
Players to watch. And
so,
I mean, I want to watch Eric Berry.
I always want to watch Eric Berry. Phil,
your cousin,
my unrelated cousin. You know what I mean when I say cousin. Phil said Jordan Jefferson was a player to watch.
No one wanted to watch Jordan.
No one really wanted to.
Especially LSU fans, especially don't want to watch him when the game's on the line late in the fourth quarter.
But he also said that his backup, Russell Shepard, he also said he would be good.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. I don't know how he was. I mean, he didn't make too big of an impact.
No, yeah.
I don't know how much how good he was in the few chances he got.
Yeah, Phil was.
He could have been good.
I feel like Phil was kind of high on LSU.
He was.
Surprisingly.
He was. And he was drinking Ole Miss and LSU, which is the wrong way to go.
Yeah, obviously it should have been Alabama and Arkansas that we were all up on.
Which I was.
He also said, and this was a good prediction from him, he said to watch Shea Hodge, who finished the year with better stats than Julio Jones and A.J. Green, 70 receptions, over 1,100 yards, 8 touchdowns.
And he had Devin Snead thrown to him.
And he had.
So, I mean, he has the same excuse. He had a bad quarterback, and yet he had a great season.
But a good quarterback was predicted by Mike McCall, who said Ryan Mallett. He said, like, the way he talked about Ryan Mallett was, like, completely accurate. Like, you really got to give him credit for this. He said we'd be talking about him like people talked about Jevin Snead at the end of last season.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I was making those same comparisons. That, like, not that they're the same type of quarterback. They're completely different type of quarterbacks. But it was just kind of interesting how they both transferred in from a big program, had a lot of hype, you know, heading into that year.
Ryan Mallett, best quarterback in the SEC this year.
I agree.
3,627 yards, 30 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. And when you throw that many times, that's so impressive. He's really super talented.
He's big.
He's huge.
He's 6'8". He looks down at his line, and it's kind of scary.
Which is unusual completely. He was also high on the Georgia running back situation, but in the form of Richard Samuel and Caleb King, when it was actually Wishon Ely who had the biggest year rushing for them. Those guys didn't have bad years. They combined for 989 yards and 9 touchdowns, but it's just sort of like Ely had the breakout year for them. And again, anything from Georgia is hard to look at and say, like, yeah, that was certainly worth watching. Another guy he was high on, oddly, was Larry Smith, the Vanderbilt quarterback, who finished with about 1,100 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 7 interceptions.
Destroyed. What game? He was outright. He got hurt the game before at Florida.
Yeah.
Can't remember what his injury was, but it was really bad.
Yeah, so not a big year for Larry Smith. Probably not the best player for us to have said to watch. But again, we batted about.
I'd pick anyone from Vanderbilt. I really want to question
was,
him.
He was curious. You know, he thought he saw something in him that, you know, they were going to have a better year. He's going to, I don't know.
Better year than last year?
Not than the year before, but like at least as good. And that the reason would be Larry Smith.
God, that was awful.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'd ever pick someone from Vanderbilt.
No, we batted about 500, though. There was, for every terrible prediction, there were some pretty good ones in there. For every Jordan Jefferson, there was a Shea Hodge. So good stuff from that. Other things we talked about were some surprisingly good and bad SEC teams. I think this is where we hit our stride. McCall said Arkansas would be surprisingly good. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was necessarily surprising because they became one of those teams that were so underrated they were overrated.
Yeah.
But good year.
It was very close to me being absolutely right about how I picked the East. I can't remember. I think it was if Arkansas had beat LSU in that one game that went to overtime, which they probably should have beat LSU, I would have been right. It would have been Alabama, Ole Miss, Arkansas. Or no, Alabama, LSU, Arkansas, then Ole Miss.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how I predicted it.
Yeah.
I would have been extremely happy.
McCall also said LSU would be surprisingly bad, which in terms of what the standards were at the beginning of the year, I think that's safe to say. You know, Capital One Bowl loss.
No one wants to go to the Capital One.
Yeah, exactly.
And losing it. I mean, you have to just a couple years ago, but no one actually wants to.
Yeah, like disappointing season on the whole. So I feel like it's safe to say LSU was surprisingly bad.
And not to mention they had to play in the Citrus Bowl, which is just
unfair to everybody. Bobby, you said that Tennessee would be surprisingly good, could easily be second in the East.
They were second in the East, were they not?
They were indeed.
Thank you very much.
You did not actually give a surprisingly bad team, so nice job on that.
Well, I mean, I'd probably say Auburn, since that's I'm going to stick to it right now.
You would have been wrong,
You're surprisingly bad this season.
Phil said LSU would be surprisingly good. He said second in the West at worst.
Well, they were second, but only because anyone could have been second.
Yeah, so it was just such a toss.
I think they all finished with 4 losses.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those where it's hard for me to judge LSU's season as surprisingly good in any sense. So he also said South Carolina would be surprisingly bad because that's the team he said could be at 4-8. They weren't good. They weren't terrible. I'd say they were unsurprisingly mediocre.
Yes. Sure, yeah.
South Carolina?
That sounds
yeah.
good.
All right, I said South Carolina. I was drinking the Kool-Aid, too. I said South Carolina would be surprisingly bad. I was wrong.
You were? No one could predict that Steven Garcia would actually be, like, capable yeah. this season. I wouldn't say he was great, but he wasn't bad. He was good.
However, check this out. Uh-oh. I said that Arkansas would be surprisingly good, finishing fourth, but with upset potential.
Yeah, they had potential.
I said Tennessee would finish second in the East.
Yeah, no, you did
good. Nailed both of those.
I went for Arkansas as third. I went for it, and I missed, is, but
I liked that because it's like you took enough of a chance, whereas, you know, and then it's like it almost happened, and you would have looked brilliant if it paid off. It's like Kyle's thing about Oklahoma. You would have looked brilliant if it paid off, yeah. but then otherwise it's kind of like, well, you know, you liked what you saw out of the team when the year started. So that's it for that. We're going to move on, wrap this show up with our Reggies and Kyle's. Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. One good thing, one bad thing. Let's start with yours. Go ahead and do both of them.
My Reggie is going to go to the NFL. Despite what Kyle may think, it is predictable. I got, in the NFC was, I did preseason, I did a column on preseason predictions. I predicted how the playoffs would run down. And the NFC, I did okay. I got 3 out of 6. I got the Eagles. I got both wild cards, which was what I'm most excited about. I got the Eagles and the Packers as the wild card. And then I said that the Vikings would win the North. Those were what I did right. I also picked the Seahawks to win the West. I wasn't very high on the Cardinals coming in. That was my bad.
I think we all thought Kurt Warner was going to get hurt.
Yeah, no, I just didn't think they were as good as they were last year.
Huh.
Yeah, that was it. That was it.
See, I thought Kurt Warner was going to get
hurt.
And I
thought Seahawks were better. They added TJ Houshmandzadeh. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was one of the big things. They didn't have wide receiver. I thought they'd be better. They weren't.
I saw an extended Matt Leinart period, well, which is why I wasn't really high on the Cards.
The AFC though, the killed AFC it. Is where yeah, killed it killed it. I said the Patriots win the East. They did. I said the Steelers would win the North. That was my one mistake. My one mistake.
And it's
I know.
So close. Too.
I know. I said the Colts would win the South, and I said the Chargers would win the West. And then I said the Ravens and the Jets would be the wild card. They both are.
Unbelievable.
And I said it would be Ravens and the Vikings in the Super Bowl.
Which
it's still capable. I mean, the Ravens won their first round. And
impressively.
Yeah. And so they have to beat the Colts, which is going to be a big challenge. But I have faith in them. Ray Rice is my boy. Rutgers grad. He wasn't a grad. Rutgers student at one point. Yeah. He was great. He dominates. Ray Rice, watch it. And Kyle.
Your Super Bowl has potential, but it's unlikely at best.
It's unlikely, but I'm still excited that there's just still a chance going into the second week of the playoffs.
Yeah.
My Kyle Jackson mm-hmm. is going to go to Kyle Maestri. I expected when I came here for this podcast, I was expected, you know, this would be an hour and a half trip. Instead, we are now going on 2 hours because we had to do a stopping point to take Kyle to class, and then we came back. Adam was hungry, so we stopped to get food, let him eat.
I'm dying here.
We're now going on the two-hour mark, and this was way more time than I plan to dedicate to this podcast.
It's more time than you ever plan to spend with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, we turned this into an afternoon is what we did. But I'm not gonna acknowledge that because Kyle went to class.
Yeah,
he's giving up this for class. I respect that, so I refuse to acknowledge that, Kyle. But I will give out mine. My Reggie Nelson is going to the city of Nashville this weekend. I made the trip for the Florida Vanderbilt basketball game. I love Nashville. I came back and I was like, man, I wish I had more time to spend in Nashville. And then Kyle reminded me, well, you'll probably be going back in the fall because Florida plays Vanderbilt football there. And I was like, oh, sweet. And then Phil was like, and the SEC basketball tournament's there in March. And I was like, this is awesome. I get to spend 4 more days in Nashville. So I get about a week's worth of Nashville time throughout the rest of the year, which I'm very excited about because I love Nashville every time I go up there. I think it's the Tennessean in me comes out. So I love Nashville.
Talk with a little bit of Southern accent.
A little bit more. But I don't know if I explained this. When I go up, when I make these trips now, because usually half the time it's probably just going to be me alone, I'm always telling people I'm going on business. What brings you to Nashville? Oh, I'm here on business. And that line... that worked. I told somebody it was our business. They didn't ask what. They just accepted it.
Yeah. As much as I
more reason to love the people.
As much as I enjoyed the road trips this semester or this football season, there were a lot of ones I wish I would have gone on. Nashville would have been one. I don't care if they're playing Vanderbilt. That just seems like a great one to go to.
It's a cool city.
I would have loved to go to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
Which you get to do next year.
Yeah.
What else was – there was another one that I really want. I would like to – Tennessee. I could do without Tennessee.
Really?
I don't really want to go to Knoxville.
But I would like to have gone to Auburn as well. Auburn Alabama, those are the ones I would have loved to go to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And instead, we got Starkville and South Carolina.
Yeah, those were rough.
And Kentucky was pretty nice.
Kentucky's pretty cool, yeah.
But we didn't, since it was such a long drive, we didn't get much time there. I'd have liked the longest stay in Kentucky. But, yeah, I would have loved Nashville. Would have been, I don't care how bad of a game that would have been, I would have loved to go to Nashville.
It's a very cool combination of, like, Southern and, like, big city. And, like, it's like the Southern big city. Obviously, Atlanta is sort of, like, a very metro, you know.
Yeah, no.
So I like Nashville because it's got...
I've said before that my plan on... My dream job would land me in a big, like, with a big city around.
Yeah.
But you go 10, 15 minutes away, and you don't even know there's a big city nearby.
Exactly.
I haven't been to Nashville, but I get the feeling that that's what it's like. That you can get that
big city feel
with plenty of sports, all the stuff to do. But if you drive away from it, it's nice towns all around, and you don't have to live in the city.
Exactly. That's part of why I love Nashville. Also, when I went up there, it snowed. I haven't seen snow in a very long time, a couple, you know, 3 or 4 years or whatever, and... Like, it actually was snowing, like, when I woke up. And I don't care how cold it was. That was sweet to see snow.
Yeah, there was a trip, on a business trip. Snow threats around here. Saying,
yeah.
People saying, there's going to be snow. There's going to be snow.
I said, Gainesville.
Just because it's under 32 degrees does not mean that's going to snow. And they're like, no, there's a chance of rain. I'm like, but it's got to be well under 32 and raining. You don't want it to be around 30 and raining.
Because then it's cold rain
and everybody's miserable. Yeah. You don't want that. You want it to actually snow. If it's going to snow, it needs to go all out. It needs to be in the tens, you know, really snowing. I don't want there's like half snow. Like there's a couple snowflakes mixed in with a bunch of rain.
It's freezing rain.
I'm not going to be happy about it. And apparently Miami news station had on its Twitter saying, like, if anyone can confirm the reports of snow, like, tweet at us or something like that. I don't know. It was a lot of chaos in Florida.
Yeah.
It was not actually snow.
It was a lot of, like, Bigfoot sightings. Like, tell us, oh, we saw snow. I swear I saw snow. Like, there's a lot of that.
There was one time where I was out down in West Palm. We have the South Florida Fair. And I was at the fair. I went on a water ride this night. This was really because I was tired of waiting in lines. There's no lines when it's cold out for
a terrible decision.
Yeah, for a water ride. So I go on the water ride. I'm freezing cold.
Sure.
One of my friends made fun of me for going on it. So I threw my cup of water on him to make sure he could feel my pain.
You're just harsh.
Yeah, I was harsh. And then people, like, if you look up, you can see snow. And you look up, and it's like, that kind of looks like snow. But by the time it got to you, no longer anything resembling snow. Yeah. It was not fun.
Yeah.
And I was already wet. Luckily, I was already wet, so it didn't make too much of a difference.
You, yeah.
But, don't go on water rides when it's below 30 degrees.
Sage-like advice. That's a pro tip from Bobby.
And if you do, make sure you throw a drink on any friends making fun of you.
Makes you feel better.
Yeah.
One thing it has been very cold in Gainesville, though. Like, record lows.
It has
lows,
been. So. Yeah, no, it really has been. I was unprepared coming up.
Yeah. But speaking of miserable, like you were talking about earlier, I'm going to give my Kyle Jackson to my Toyota Echo, my 2003 Toyota Echo. Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I love the Echo more than I think I'm capable of loving another human being. I do. However, I don't think it's well suited for these long road trips. The gas mileage is exceptional. It's great. But when it's just me, see, I'm driving 18 hours in less than 48 hours like I did this weekend. The Echo doesn't have cruise control. The Echo is not the most comfortable vehicle. And my leg is just screwed up enough where my foot points in a certain direction, just like how I was born, to where I have to sit in a way that like is completely uncomfortable to my knee. So I'm going to be the first sports writer to develop a sports injury while covering a sport and not playing one. I'm going to tear my ACL at some point this season. I have to drive to Arkansas. I'm going to tear my ACL on the drive.
If you hear a pop, go see the doctor.
Yeah, exactly. I'll just pull over and stop. But, yeah, like, and then for some reason, I don't know if it's just the way I drive or whatever, but then, like, I woke up and I was sore Saturday. Like, my knee was sore. My shoulders were sore when I woke up the other day from drive. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I feel as though that's like the catch win too. If you want a car with really good gas mileage, you're gonna have to make a lot of sacrifices, including, you know, being comfortable. One of my friends
like
has an old Honda Civic. It's like a 1990, but like he bought it in like high school, and it still only had like 30,000 because it just like sat in this old lady's like garage. And it gets ridiculously good gas mileage, but doesn't even have cup holders. Doesn't have a passenger side mirror.
Wow.
It's apparently that's how it was made without that. And it doesn't have cruise control.
Yeah.
A lot of sacrifices for again that great gas mileage. And I feel as though sometimes maybe you need to splurge a little bit. I don't have a car, so I can't really speak about like splurging for a car. Hopefully, I get one soon.
Yeah. I don't know. It was just like, That was uncomfortable. When I woke up the next morning, I was like, my knee is sore. Like, the basketball players, like, aren't sore, and they go out and play basketball, and they go out and, like, exert their bodies like that. And it's like, I just sat in the car for 9 hours on the way here.
Yeah, no,
sore.
Don't worry. One of the most ridiculous ones, I think it's all the vibrating that happens when you sit in a car.
Yeah.
But I hurt my shoulder in high school playing football, and I had surgery on it. I don't think it really did much because it's still bothers me anytime I do anything physical with my shoulder.
Yeah.
And when I sit in the car, it actually hurts me on long trips. I usually have to ice it when I get somewhere because of...
Well, I would recommend long trips with me in the echo.
Yeah, so I mean, it's another... I think that one might be even more embarrassing. At least you're doing something with your knee. I'm just sitting there. I'm like, oh, my shoulder's hurting. It's kind of embarrassing. But
yeah,
eventually, maybe I'll fix him again. Yeah. But I don't know. It's pointless at this point.
Yeah, the echo probably not well suited for you on long road trips. Then you may want to just cover games here in Gainesville, or get somebody else to drive us in that situation. Maybe something with a little more insulation, a little more meat on its bones.
Yeah, I think it's all the vibrating that happens when you're sitting in the car.
Yeah, well, the echo, like, if something's loose, you can hear and feel it vibrating. It's rough times. Like I said, I love the echo more than I think I'm capable of loving another human being. But it's sometimes we have a rocky relationship, but. In the end, everything works out well. It's just a little rough at times. But that wraps it up for this show. You've just gotten a little bit of personal time with me and Bobby here. So we'll be back probably at the end of this week. This is pretty much the last of the football stuff unless we get some more news, like players going to the NFL.
We'll throw in. Don't you worry.
Oh, yeah.
Don't go anywhere. They come for football.
Yeah,
remember
don't go
that.
Anywhere.
We'll still be doing good stuff. We'll still throw in some fun football stuff.
Absolutely.
There's always the NFL draft talk.
Absolutely.
National Signing Day is right around
the
corner.
Huge.
Ah, oh, man. We'll have big stuff for
you. Yeah, the assistant
I mean,
coaches
I know Kyle
stuff.
And Phil don't really love that stuff. I think Kyle's finally going to get into the NFL draft. I'm kind of pushing him towards it. He's unwilling to dedicate the time like I am to watching pretty much the entire draft.
I love the NFL. I love the drafts.
Oh,
I love
no,
the NFL and
to
NBA
me,
draft.
It's exciting. To other people, it's boring. But
which is weird because I hate recruiting.
I love recruiting. I love all that stuff.
Yeah.
I love analyzing people.
Yeah.
And then them not living up to any expectations. Any of the expectations.
True. But, yeah, we're still going to be talking football stuff. This is sort of our last hurrah in terms of football.
Yeah.
But we'll,
this is
going to
be the last one fully dedicated.
Yeah.
Dedicated
football. We'll have football news, you know, recruits, guys going to the NFL. Lord knows if any more coaching changes happen. I feel like they're out of coaching changes to happen unless Dan McCarney ends up at USF, which is a strong possibility, and they'll have to bring in a replacement for him. I don't know.
If he's gone... The only people left from this season will be Leffler
and White and...
Heater. And Heater, yeah.
That's
yeah, no, that's a huge... I mean, there's always coaching turnover.
Adazio.
Oh. I don't count him as an actual coach. I'm pretty sure he just stands there and says, yes, sir.
And, you know, maybe Urban Meyer. I don't know.
Well, I was going for assistant coaches, I forgot about Adazio. He's a joke, though.
That's certainly a situation we're going to keep people updated with
no,
on
that's,
the podcast,
that one's
going
to be... There's always coaching turnovers, but... To lose almost your entire staff is just unheard of.
Yeah. So stick around for all of that. Obviously, we're going to have some really great basketball coverage because yours truly is going to be providing some of it. So stick around for that. We'll get into some small sports coming into the later part of the spring. Stick around. We're not done here yet just because football season's over. Tell your friends. We got some big stuff planned.
This is when we get creative.
This is when we get creative. This is when our genius comes. We did the Mount Rushmore podcast.
Oh,
for
God.
Last year
I love the Mount
in the middle of February.
The Mount Rushmore. If you have never listened to it, Dale will put a Dale Barry with a little info. Maybe he should put the date of the Mount Rushmore
it was
podcast.
February 13th, 2009.
How he memorizes stuff, I don't know. Go listen to that one. That one was great. If you want to listen to good talk, that was it.
That's the kind of stuff we're going to keep doing here. So send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. If there's any special stuff you want us to talk about, especially you know at the end of football season, feel free to send it our way. We definitely will, especially basketball related.
Maybe we'll bring back Gators in the NFL. Sure, the season's about to be over, but we have time for it now.
We'll probably do some sort of Gators in the NFL sort of like wrap-up thing.
Oh, yeah. I like it. As if we've been doing it week to week.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, this is the final segment of Gators in the NFL. So look forward to all of that. We will be back probably at the end of this week. Thanks for listening.
End the show, Barry!